And we're back. Welcome to No Direction Out of Character. I'm Jefferson J. Thacker, also known as Param, and I am joined by
Alexander the Gunas, the Everyman Gamer. Although, Param, real talk, can we really be back if this is the first time we're doing this?
We're back always.
Oh gosh, it's like an infinity loop, like in Futurama, where like you just keep going forward until you're actually going backwards by going forward.
If you're wondering why we are calling this No Direction Out of Character, it's because this doesn't really fit with anything else we're doing. This is an unofficial, informal show where me and Alex are going to chat about PaizoCon 2018 because we don't want to wait. Ryan couldn't be with us, but the quote-unquote real PaizoCon recap episode will happen next week. During normal No Direction time, and No Direction Beyond will be back the week after,
which is another reason why we wanted to do this, because we were afraid that like if we waited 2 weeks to talk about Starfinder news at all, then like everybody would forget and not care anymore. So we're going to talk a little bit about that too. It's an all games podcast.
Ooh.
Jazz hands.
Indeed. Also, we have something else to announce about No Direction Beyond Episode 2. Or not Episode 2, Episode whatever that one's going to be. We are moving No Direction Beyond's live record date to match No Direction's live record date. So no matter which of the two shows you like, you will always be able to tune in on them on Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. 5:30 p.m. Paso time.
Because we'll do everything we can to get you into the habit of watching us.
Yay! Also, if you're watching us live on Twitch at twitch.tv/nodirection, please chime in and chat and ask questions, because this is one super informal, and any input we get, we'll be able to answer any questions you guys got about anything you want us to talk about. And we're mostly going to be talking about PaizoCon, Pathfinder 2 experiences, the Starfinder news, all kinds of cool stuff. But again,
pretty
we stress
much everything.
This is an informal show. This is not going to be a normal episode of No Direction. Okay, indeed. Alex, we survived PaizoCon, huh?
Yeah, we claimed that couch in the name of No Direction.
That couch will forever have our butts imprinted on it.
Yeah, so like Param and I are both East Coasters, so we both have like when you're an East Coast person going to Seattle, there are basically only two flights that you'll get out there. You're either going really early in the morning or really late at night. It has something to do with the trade winds blowing against, you know, the planes and whatnot. Regardless of whatever the reason is, Param and I were both stuck at the airport until like really late at night. My flight arrived at 10:30 and his was at like midnight. So we claimed this one couch in the hotel lobby where PaizoCon took place in the name of No Direction. So that is the official No Direction couch.
Yeah, I think we spent like 6 hours on that couch just chatting about network stuff and plans and awesome kitsunes. Actually, we didn't talk about kitsunes once.
No, I was great.
It was Yosoki's.
We did talk about Yosoki, but we talked a lot about like plans for the upcoming RPG design club, and we talked about other things relating to those projects, and we talked about stuff for No Direction and the announcements, and we did take that one break for Subway.
Subway break.
We gave up our claim to that couch, and nobody contested it. So therefore, nobody will ever contest it, and it is our couch for the end of time.
That is how it works. Legally and distinctly, eminent domain, that couch is ours. Uh-huh.
Correct. I agree. But there was lots of cool stuff we saw and we heard. Do you want to talk about Starfinder or Pathfinder first?
Let us start with Starfinder. So what cool stuff did we hear about Starfinder, Alex?
So before we get started, I have to point out that like I freelanced in both RPG line books that were announced, so like my excitement is a little bit biased, but I will never claim to not be biased on a show that I'm on when it comes to things that I've worked on. Mm-hmm. So fair warning, prepare to be biased,
extra biased.
Right, let's start by talking about something I didn't work on, the Dawn of Flame adventure path. which, in my opinion, the premise for this adventure path is probably the best one we've seen from Starfinder so far, just because it sounds really... This is going to sound weird, but it sounds really sci-fi. Like, Dead Sons isn't really something that couldn't happen in a fantasy game. And I don't feel like Signal of Screams or Against the Aslanti Throne really are, too. They fit into the setting, but, like, you know, I go against a tyrannical empire, like, you know, Chelyx. Or I'm going to go and find this super weapon, like in pretty much every other classic D&D adventure ever. There's a virus that's... Oh, we've really done this before, haven't we? So, like, for me, the new Dawn of Flame adventure path is, like, really cool and different. And for those of you who don't know, it's an adventure path that basically stuff is happening to the sun. And you have to figure out a way to go into the sun. Yeah. And that is great. I love this. This is the greatest. And, like, I've expressed this opinion at PaizoCon. And people are like, well, Alex, there's a mage living on the sun in according to distant worlds, don't you know? And I'm like, no. It doesn't matter, because if level one players try to go to the sun, they're going to have a bad time. And in Starfinder, you might be able to get away with that. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, they announced this during the banquet as the one that will be following Signal of Screams. It's going to be a full 6-part adventure path. And it's sounds super interesting, though there does seem to be some sort of demonic figure as the art they previewed for this, so that might give us a
that
hint.
Was an Efreeti.
An Efreeti.
It was an Efreeti. No, if you look at the art, so first of all, uh-huh. It took me, because I thought it was just like recycled art, because it's literally the same pose that the art from the Efreeti in the Bestiary 1 has. But if you look at him, he's got like the super high-tech sword and armor. It is literally coded to be a sci-fi version of the original Efreeti art from Bestiary 1. And I'm so excited. Ooh. I want elemental planar invasions. I want the genies to take over this future. It's great.
But will Efreeti really have fun in the sun?
Yes, because they're immune to fire. That's why.
Extra hot fire?
According to the rules, yes. However, that's a really interesting question, because in Pathfinder, the sun just deals fire damage according to distant shores. So technically, if you're immune to fire, you're fine on it. But a lot of plasma weapons in Starfinder deal fire and electricity damage. So maybe in Starfinder, being on the sun does fire and electricity damage. And maybe they have rules for being crushed by its immense gravity. I don't know. I guess we'll have to wait and see.
All right, so the other books previewed as part of the Starfinders, they showed us a lot of what's going to be inside the armory. That one has previously been announced.
Yep.
Lots of power armor was showed off, like basically every type of weapon to fill all the level gaps that exist in the Starfinder core rulebook. So
yeah,
if you want laser rifles at the right levels, they exist now.
Yeah, they basically said they're taking every brand... I'm going to call them brand. Every brand of weapon and taking them from 1 to 20, which is pretty stellar. I know, like, looking, I was leveling up my Yosoki operative from PaizoCon yesterday, and I was like, oh man, I want to buy a new pistol. Let's see what we got. Oh, the next new pistol isn't until level 4. Well, I guess I'm just going to sit here then and keep using this level 1 pistol. I feel like in a game that involves... The item level so much, it's important to have items that are going up regularly, especially because that's sort of the feeling of the world that Starfinder is going for. Mm-hmm. So I feel like this book is going to be so helpful. And I'm not just saying that because I wrote cool stuff in it. Mm-hmm.
I also saw that with the power armor specifically, they included stuff that wasn't just tech-based. There was like the magic-based Staglord's armor that lets you teleport.
The greatest armor? Did you see the one that was like, this is for spellcasters. When you wear it, it's easier for you to beat spell resistance or something like that?
Okay, well, that's just great.
Yeah, it was the one where the guy was like, ha, and the armor was wreathed in runes, and you're like, oh my god, I want to play a technomancer with that. Let me mance the tech out of that that armor. Mm-hmm.
And the other book they showed off a lot of was one that was kind of announced at PaizoCon, but accidentally announced on their website months ago. Alien Archive 2.
Yeah, I got really excited because they previewed a monster that I wrote for that at the banquet. So like, it's the first time I had ever seen the artwork for it, and I was like,
"Oh, which one was that?"
I wrote the Squawkses.
Okay, of course you wrote the Squawkses.
So actually, they were assigned to me without like really any consideration, which is funny. Another thing that I wrote is something that I've written about in a previous product for Paizo that's not Kitsune related, but the person who did the work and like assigned it out didn't realize that I had literally like just finished writing about this like race right before literally 2 months before I got this assignment, and I was like, wow, you know, you did your research, you knew that I just did this, and he was like, sure I did. So it was a happy coincidence. I'm sure people who really want to go digging through forms can figure out what it is based on what I say. But if you do, man, you know, keep that prize to yourself for now. It'll be out soon enough.
So besides the Squawkses, which are these weird alien squirrel fox rabbit things.
Oh, they're great. Also, they made Squatch Pockets, which I didn't write, but that's amazing. That's great. They're not literally called Squatch Pockets, but I guess like they were described as being like little containers that you can bring your pet squawks around with you. But yeah, they're like squirrel fox hybrids, and they're adorable.
Yeah,
they're
great. They had really cute pictures. They had like a normal red fox version, and then like a little finnick squirrel fox version. They also previewed the Osharu, which were the science space monks of technology, so that were also snail people.
Oh, they weren't snails. They were just slugs. There was no shell on that monster. They had, like, the llama. Did you see the llama?
Yeah, the space llama.
Great. There was, like, some weird, like, canine-looking thing. I wouldn't be surprised if we got stats for that. There was a whole bunch of just really cool looking preview stuff.
I imagine the canine thing might just be Adlitz because they're native to Triaxis.
So when it was up there and they were naming them off, he called them like a Lupone or something like that. I kind of hope they would be Adlitz, to be honest, because we know they are on Triaxis thanks to Reign of Winter. And I mean, you know, Rob McCreary developed that adventure path, and now he's he's a creative lead for Starfinder. But maybe they've decided, like, hey, we don't want to be called this anymore. We're like a new thing, and that would be fine. Because the one thing that the Adlitz have going against them is that they have like a giant slew of magical powers. It's like, oh gosh, why are you this terrifying spellcaster of ice and snow? Won't you just let it go, Adlitz? Let it go, please.
No,
they won't. They can't let it go anymore.
Now the other one, I know they named it off here, but the ones that's on the preview that we've put up on the website and that you've probably seen elsewhere, and we're going to have a really high quality version of this preview that nobody else has put up because we're going to have pixel perfect slides integrated in that, and that'll go up soon.
Yeah, Dan, the social media guy at Paizo, who is behind the scenes for a lot of our interviews with them, is pretty awesome for that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's hooked us up with some help in order to get that video up and perfect. So we're going to have the best footage for that video, and we're going to have that up in the next couple of days.
It's going to be the best. Oh, so good.
Also, but one of the races that it basically looks like an Umber Hulk with a plasma rifle, and I just want to know how the many ways that it can kill all of my players.
So, like, you know that monster that's on the front cover? Every time I see it, I think it's Yogg-Saron from World of Warcraft. Mm-hmm. Literally every time I'm like, oh my god, it's Plant Yogg-Saron. I want you, Plant Yogg-Saron. Mm-hmm. I know it's not Plant Yogg-Saron, but I kind of want it to be that.
What was the... Plant Yogg-Saron would be bad because I don't want to die and lose all of reality.
No, you have to go inside its brain and shoot its brain with your plasma rifle before you go insane. That fight was great. That is a staple of cinematic fight design.
The other thing they announced was that Season 1 for Starfinder Society is not going to be done yet.
I know they're making it longer. They're making A, and it's pretty cool. Yeah. I mean, I'm not up to date on Starfinder. I had kind of had to take a back seat because of my master's, but I played mostly Starfinder Society at Gen Con, and I got my Yosoki operative high enough to do Star Sugar Heartlove, and that was kind of my goal for the convention. So I'm hoping to see more of it, and I'm looking forward to seeing, like, you know, what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Now, Star Sugar Heartlove is definitely a venture I want to get into, but the only thing I got to play Starfinder-related at the convention, besides sitting down with a Delve and hope and was to do Jason Keeley's Skittershot game, which
was it was as beautiful awesome. As yeah. Oh,
yeah.
It's so great.
They, like,
I've never seen it, so I don't know if it's true, but I was talking with Jason Keeley at the con, and he said that there's this really interesting article in the book that goes something along the lines of 10 things you really need to know about Skittermanders.
Right.
So I feel like if you're into role-playing that race, you're going to really like this book.
Mm-hmm.
From my conversation with him, it really sounds like the goal is to try to make sure people realize that Skittermanders, like, they aren't crazy zany space goblins because they already have space goblins.
Right. That was a key objective he stressed while he was teaching us how to play Skittermanders.
Yeah. So would you say that the presentation makes them feel different from space goblins?
Absolutely. The 10 facts about Skittermanders were super helpful, and it was also good for goblins, so I'm glad they repeated that. And each of the Skittermanders had a good explanation of, like, how their particular Skittermanderness manifests, and they definitely all felt like they were part of the same core race, but or species, but they were differently distinct. Like most of the Skittermanders were rather hyper because they are a very energetic race, but one of the ones were just super curious, and that was the one I played. So it was supposed to be quieter and more contemplative than the other Skittermanders. But it just means it got distracted by shinies very easily.
Jason Keeley just signed into Twitch.
Huzzah! And it was a fun adventure. And I don't know that we made him super happy, because there was definitely lots of zaniness that happened. I don't want to spoil too much of the adventure, but some of the zaniness that happened was us building cloth effigies of the entire crew of one of the starships, because we were told not to change anything. So therefore, when people were removed, we had to make sure that it was still the same. And that is not going to be common to all of them. That was just something that happened with our group in particular, a quest to make sure that everything was the same and as much the same as we could make it.
I mean, I talked to Kate Baker after you guys had played. Kate Baker, the Pathfinder Society / Starfinder Society / all-around great freelancer Kate Baker.
Mm-hmm.
And she seemed to think that you guys were exceedingly helpful in your adventures.
Indeed. It was. We wanted to make sure that everybody was perfectly happy and had a great time. Even
Jason Keeley wants you to know that he's glad that you had fun and that he loves zaniness.
Ah. I'm glad to know that you love zaniness. I just
mission
didn't
accomplish.
I very much tried to not. I tried to very much be an anti-goblin during the entirety of it, and it was a blast. It was very well written. What was going on made a lot of sense. It had lots of opportunities for the Skittermanders to show off exactly what they were, and I was really glad that we weren't playing first level characters. These were third, I think maybe second or third level characters, so they were a little bit more formidable than most of these free preview adventures you usually play through, because I'm getting very tired of always playing first level characters in previews and demo games. And this let you explore a lot more. And, of course, you died a lot less because you had all those extra hit points.
True story. The real Masked Ferret asks, Param, how long did Skittershot take to play?
We got through it in about 3 hours. And that included a whole lot of us distracting and going on tangents.
Delightful. The best kind of tangents.
And then we were lucky enough that that Jason added a extra bit at the end for us as we still had time left and we were not quite done having fun yet.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Darren Caldemeyer's in chat too. Man, we just have all the cool people in chat today. It's interesting because we have a lot of people who are talking about how they either really like Starfinder more than Pathfinder, or like they feel like they're interested more in Starfinder because some people feel like Pathfinder has an expiration date on it.
I can understand that feeling. I mean, anytime the new edition is now announced, it's hard to not think about it coming and starting over from scratch and stuff. And I don't blame anybody for feeling like that. And I don't blame people for reconsidering what purchases they're going to make based on that. And Starfinder provides a great excuse to focus your energies elsewhere until the transition finishes. But at the same time, there are some fantastic products that are coming out for the last little bit of Pathfinder's lifespan. Like, and so they announced, gosh.
So talking about that, we already knew that Rise of the Rune Lords was a thing, which is like
the Return of the Rune Lords.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's like the final part in the Rune Lords trilogy, so to speak, because you have Rise of the Rune Lords, then Shattered Star, then Return of the Rune Lords. And so, like, I was like, I've never played the other two. I'm not really super invested into this one. But then they said that it's the time travel AP, and I was like, and that's all I'm going to say about that. Right. But time travel AP certainly got me interested to at least read it. I don't know if it's going to be one I play, but if we're talking about one that I want to play, can we please talk about Tyrant's Grasp?
Okay.
Also known as one of the three adventure paths that I feel are still going to make Pathfinder 1 worth playing.
I know.
The other two being War of the Crown and Strange Aeons. That's just my opinion.
It's almost criminal that it's appropriate, but it's almost criminal that it's going to be the last one, because by everything that they described and all the hype surrounding it and all of the cards they're probably going to be willing to play, the Tyrant's Grasp has a lot of potential. And it's going to be the last hurrah for the official published APs for Pathfinder 1.
It's like you're doing an adventure path that literally fights the big bad of the setting. And so, like, it makes me wonder, gosh, are they going to take this forward? Obviously, they've mentioned that the events of certain adventure paths are going to be made canon in Pathfinder 2 because they're advancing the storyline. It's one of the things they were talking about a little bit at PaizoCon this year. But man, oh man, can you imagine like if the lose condition of Tyrant's Grasp as Tarbifon gets out and plunges the inner sea into darkness and launches a war against Ustalav, and like, oh, there's so much great stuff that could happen, win or lose, with this revelation that apparently the Whispering Tyrant is going to be active again.
It's especially appropriate too, because the Whispering Tyrant is the first piece of published product for what would become Pathfinder, and so him closing it out is also like just some sort of poetic.
Yeah. I am really excited for it. I was thinking that maybe whatever they were going to do was going to try to explain why goblins have like a nicer tinge to it. Maybe that'll be, oh, do you know what'd be really crazy? Mm-hmm. If Return of the Rune Lords is time travel, has the PCs messing with the timeline, and that causes a bunch of goblin tribes to not be so bad, and that's why goblins are playable.
I don't know if that'd be super cool. I want there to not be any sort of reminiscence of the time of troubles that affected Forgotten Realms and stuff, but they're going to have to do something to explain goblins as a play race.
Time travel screw-ups. Time travel screw-ups. I love a good time travel screw-up as long as it doesn't ruin a setting. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that saying like, oh man, you killed a mosquito in a bog and that mosquito was going to kill a goblin who would eventually come to, you know, propagate for peace with the people of Sandpoint. And because that mosquito died, that goblin survived. And now there's nice goblins. That would just be really outlandishly like, what is it, butterfly effect? Mm-hmm. I think that would be really funny, but I have a weird sense of humor like that. Mm-hmm. What else? There's a lot of crazy stuff. I mean, they announced the Druid, which, if for Pathfinder playtest.
Right, they did show it off during the banquet. Not only did they show it off, they basically showed off all of the Druid all at once. They, like, it's, screenshots of, like, the actual class page and several pages throughout the class and spell pages and basically everything you need to know about a Druid.
I feel like it's less that they showed off the Druid and more that they just showed off the life and times of Leany. Because, like, man, oh, man, they were like, let's look at every little aspect of how you would build Leany. And so, like, we saw spreads from the Ancestries pages. We saw spreads from the Backgrounds pages. We saw a lot of different and heard about a lot of different Druid options, which to me makes it very clear that Druid is going to be a much more dynamic class than it is in Pathfinder, which is great. It is arguably one of the least dynamic classes in the game. So to see major choices in the Druid class is really promising. Then we saw some spells. We learned that you really don't want to get in front of a wizard's disintegrate if you can help it.
That would be bad.
We learned that the Druid is going to have some crazy 20th level power that allows them to just spam earthquakes if they want it, which is amazing. I mean, like Jason Bowman said, I don't know of many problems that you can't solve with five consecutive earthquake spells. And then there was the whole crazy Leyline ability, where it's like, hey, you've tapped into Leyline so good that they power your spell slots. Your first through fifth level spells are now apparently at will. Delightful.
It was.
Just delightful.
Well, I think the crowd went crazy most when they featured dinosaur form.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how I feel about that, because it's very clearly, like, B-shape four, but, like, super focused. It makes me wonder if they're going to do super focused polymorph spells for, like, all animals, which is both a good thing and a meh thing, because on one hand, on the wizard perspective, it takes away some of the power of those spells by limiting what you can pick from. It also makes it so that those spells don't continuously become more powerful with every subsequent bestiary, which is also good. It's the same thing that kind of kept the dragon form of the dragon spells in line back in Pathfinder 1. But on the other hand, that's a lot of spells that are going to feel very samey very quick, assuming that we continue to make more spells to get those same feels. You know what I mean?
But I think this was the trade-off we had to take in order for them to do one of their other announcements, which was that one of the Druid options for their disciplines or traditions, what was that called?
Orders.
Their Druid orders. They featured four of them. One was animal focused, so you get an animal companion. One was plant focused. One was called Storm, which was elemental focused, and the final one was shapeshifting, meant that druids could start shapeshifting right at level one. And the problem with giving you shapeshift early in druid was because the polymorph spell was so versatile and powerful, it was basically like giving druids like Tenzer's transformation, the fly spell, and a billion buffs all wrapped up in one spell. And by breaking it out this way, it means that they can give them like a simple beast form right away that lets you do the fun thing, like turn into a bear or a wolf or a cheetah or a velociraptor. And then they can save the really powerful stuff for later spells and still keep the power balanced without making us wait all the way to seventh level before we can have fun.
So I'm going to go ahead and make a guess that they didn't do it for power. My bet is that they did it because it's how they wrote polymorph forms for the shifter in Ultimate Wilderness. Because one of the things they said is that polymorph spells are super difficult to use because you have to constantly reference different books in order to use them and thrip through multiple pages. By taking those little stat blocks of abilities and putting them in the spell like we saw, where like there was a bullet, Tyrannosaurus, Triceratops, so on and so forth, by putting them directly in the spell, that means the player doesn't need to go searching around through multiple different books in order to cast their cool spell. I honestly don't know if that was why they did it or whether or not that is a good solution, but it is certainly a solution. We will have to wait and see how it feels come the playtest. In what? It's May? 3 months? 3 months? It's more like 2 months because it's the start of August and it's the end of May currently.
Yep.
It's like 2 months.
Right. Which, speaking of which, if you hadn't already pre-ordered the, you ran out of time.
Yeah, you ran out of time hard.
Yeah, if this you wasn't just better, available. Well,
you better hope that they printed out extras to sell, which I'm sure they did, but they're going to go fast.
Mm-hmm.
Like sonic speed.
I expect the only extra ones are going to be the ones at Gen Con anyway, and those are going to disappear in the first day. This is going to sell faster than Starfinder sold.
Yep. So let's see. A couple notes from the audience. Let's see. We have a lot of people talking about First Edition, which is pretty cool. A lot of people want the playtest stuff. Lots of comments about how cool dinosaur shapeshifting is. I agree. A lot of people talking about different ways that polymorph spells could be used. Darren Caldemeyer, our PaizoCon countdown correspondent, comments, I'm surprised that Druidic orders weren't named after Galarian setting proper nouns. I honestly think that people are overestimating the amount of Galarian IP that's going to be in this book. I feel like it's probably going to be something similar to what Starfinder had, where, like, for the most part, none of the classes in Starfinder really draw, lean super heavy on the IP, and if they do, it's usually in a little, like, two-sentence description that can be pretty easily scrubbed of IP for third-party uses and stuff. So I kind of feel like people got up in arms over something that really wasn't that big of a deal, but I mean, this is the internet. Nobody is surprised.
We have an actual question from Andarn91, who says, I totally forgot, but have they confirmed if PF2 is resetting the setting or not? I wouldn't mind the big cataclysm event personally if done carefully. They have confirmed that they are not doing a giant setting reset. There is going to be some changes to the setting, but basically what they're going to be doing at this point is codifying the adventure paths and Pathfinder Society major events that have happened, so that basically the setting material that will be coming out with PF2 will assume that all of the adventure paths and society major events have happened and were successful.
Mm-hmm.
So things like the World Wound is now closed. There's going to be a new ruler in Tal'Dor based off of what happens in War for the Crown and other such events. Obviously, Irison's going to have a new queen.
I'm really hoping it's the queen I want it to be. I want it to be the queen that I put on the throne.
Mm-hmm. So they're going to make some official decisions there, but they said in general it's always going to be that it was a success because they didn't want any of the parties to, anybody that spent the years it takes to get through an adventure path to feel like they failed it just because Paizo said you did. And they needed to take advantage of this time period to just sort of update things and add some new material to the setting.
I agree. Justin Franklin, I think his first name is Justin. I could be wrong. J. Franklin 3000 comments, oh man, there's a Forlorn Elf background. I guess that's in response to me saying that, like, the mechanics usually don't have a whole lot of Galarian IP. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think emo elves, because all their human friends are dying, isn't super unique to Galarian.
Mm-hmm. But there is going to be that's just me. Bleachling gnomes.
That is more unique. Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree. We'll see. I think that, I mean, like, if we're talking about backgrounds and, like, race feats being the extent of Galarian's presence in the rules crunch for the initial book, I think that's pretty reasonable and okay. And even if it's a little bit beyond that, I don't think it's a huge deal. But that's just me. Darren Kalamider notes that the PaizoCon has iconics now. They're cool kids who hang out with the golem and do cool kid stuff. I enjoyed them, too.
Yeah, I mean, one is Corin, and the other one is Eka, or no, I probably got that second name wrong.
Yeah, let's put them in products and give them backstories, because we could use more, Galarian could use more rising heroes, because, man oh man, there's going to be a lot of bad stuff happening. The Whispering Tyrant is coming back, guys. We need more heroes.
It's also interesting that they chose kid adventurers.
Maybe. I don't know. I think that they, my personal opinion is that they could definitely do more, so I didn't really think too hard about it. I was like, cool, the thing I wanted. I'm going to go now.
Mm-hmm. Kiku. Kiku is the name of, thank you, Justin Peace Letter.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You are not the queen of Iris and Jedwiga. Actually, you might. You have Jedwiga in your name. Yeah. So, gosh, they announced more cool stuff for Pathfinder coming out. We had Planar Adventures, which we've done a whole bunch of podcasts and interviewing people on. Yeah.
The coolest thing that we did get to see the cover, which has a weird freaking...
That is not a weird freaking daemon. That is an Astra daemon, thank you.
Yeah, but specifically, it looks like the horrific super Demogorgon out of Stranger Things season 2, and it freaks me out.
I mean, so that monster is from like Bestiary 2. It's one of the original daemons, but you're right, and it's great, and I love it. Oh, it's so good! I'm so excited for that. I mean, obviously, we'll see how much rules crunch is in it and how helpful it's going to be, considering, you know, there's a big red button coming up close to us. But there's that. Wow, we're getting the big Sandpoint book that James Jacobs always wanted, aren't we?
Yep, 96 pages of nothing but Sandpoint.
Yep, I was like, wow, I bet this was James Jacobs' James Jacobs' project for the past 3 months, or maybe six, or maybe an eternity. I don't know. He knows a lot about Sandpoint. It probably took a lot of time to put that down.
Mm-hmm.
I've never done any adventures in Sandpoint. Like, I've never played any of the adventure paths that start there of like the four of them, and I've never done it's actually never been in Pathfinder Society, which is funny, but yeah. So I've never played an adventure there. So I'm like, oh hey, it's that thing James Jacobs likes. I'm sure he probably says the same thing when he sees a Kitsune. Mm-hmm. Oh hey, it's the thing Alex Agunis likes. Who's Alex Agunis again?
Now, this is before we go on to the next topic, we could really use some questions from the audience for this special out of character episode. So please, if you got anything you want to know about that we can talk about, go ahead and pop it out there. We would really appreciate it.
No, we can't talk about anything.
Nope. But I'm going to get a chance to talk a lot more about this during the official PuzzleCon recap episode. But Alex, what did you think now that you got to play some Pathfinder 2 playtest?
So they had Delves active for pretty much the entire con. They're cool 20-minute adventures where you get to hang out, look at a couple character sheets, and do some adventures. And so the first thing I think about Pathfinder 2E is that it's very successful in that when I walked away from the Delve, I didn't think to myself, oh, hey, I just finished a game of Pathfinder 2E. Like, I sat there and I was like, this feels like Pathfinder. This doesn't feel like specifically a specific edition. It's kind of like how if you're a Warhammer Fantasy player, you could play 6th edition and 7th edition and 9th edition, and you could be like, these all feel like Warhammer. The rules are different, and I had to learn some new things, but this still feels like the game I know. And Pathfinder 2E or Pathfinder Playtest really does feel like Pathfinder, which was really cool. I didn't really get to see a whole lot of the Goblin Alchemist, who was one of the pregens. Fumbus is among us. It's pretty great. Mm-hmm. And but that's only because the player who was playing him was like, he treated him like this porcelain goblin that needed to be protected at all time. He was the goblin waifu.
And oh, no.
Therefore, goblin waifu hid in the bushes and occasionally threw bombs, but was always hiding in the bushes. So aside from chucking a few grenades at people, like, he was there, I guess. I think that of everybody in my playtest group, Valoros and Kira stole the show. Valoros has this sick ability in the playtest called Sudden Charge, where he can take two of his three actions and move twice and attack once. So he basically spends two actions to get three actions worth of stuff out of them. And watching Valoros just zip around the battlefield and smack someone in the face with his sword was amazing. If you sit at a table with a rogue, dear God, no one will save you. You are just going to die. They do so much damage when they crit. It's not even funny. Sneak attack dice actually double from when you crit in Pathfinder 2E. And Mercil's rapier has a special ability called Deadly, where when she crits, she does an extra D8 of damage. So it's like, well, you know, my rapier does D6s, so that's 2D6. I'm sneak attacking for 1D6, so that doubles to 2D6. I've got 4D6 now. Mm-hmm. And my rapier adds an extra D8. So I'm rolling 4D6 plus D8 plus like my strength bonus, which I think she's got like a plus one, so it's like an extra two. And yeah, she rolled a 30, and that was a really dead zombie. It didn't matter that it was not weak to her rapier. The rapier was like, this is your life now. I've just pierced your brain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I first heard that sneak attack does crit, it blew my brain. Much yeah. like that zombies after you crit it. And Justin P. Slutter in chat said that he played him, meaning the goblin, crit with an acid on the boss and died, but killed the boss two rounds later thanks to the acid.
Oh, that's right. The goblin hit the dude with persistent damage. That is nasty. Mm-hmm. Persistent damage is like kind of like the generic word for things like burning and bleed in Pathfinder 2E. And if you get it, you need to take some time to get that off or you're just dead. Like, basically how it works is that at the end of a round, you can make a reflex save to get it off. Mm-hmm. And you need a natural 20 from what I was told in order to get it off if you don't spend an action. So like if you're just walking, it only comes off of you on a natural 20. If you spend time, it's like a DC 15 reflex save, but it'll kill you. It's like, wow, that is death by acid or fire right there.
Mm-hmm. I actually got to see that because the Justin Slutter was actually in mine and Ryan's Delve game at the last day of the con when we sat down to play it together. And it was just fun after he got completely crit by the boss, turned into a goblin-shaped stain on the grass, and it was still spinning his rounds, rolling persistent damage, and just owning that boss for the rest of the Delve encounter.
Troy 1989 asks, how good is the Ranger now? We don't know. Now, only the six pregens that have been featured in blogs were available at the playtest. Mm-hmm. Also, it's worth noting that information about those characters was extremely tight. Paizo was not fooling around. There was someone, I think it was Kemlock on the boards, who like back during Starfinder, he like took the book and like started taking a whole bunch of pictures of it, and like among that and other incidents, Starfinder like kind of got I remember there were like things on different websites that were like, hey, look at all these pictures, let's judge the game before it comes out, and it's very clear that Paizo is trying to make sure that information about this edition is very, very, very tightly monitored, so we did not see any classes or any rules that were not already previewed on their blog.
Right, and it wouldn't have helped taking pictures of these characters' sheets much anyway, because we were informed immediately that, hey, we kind of goofed up copying these characters down when we were putting the printout, so they were just covered in typos. Like, everybody had the same perception check, even though they didn't have the same protection, so there was a lot of, like, scratching it out and writing it on the sheet in marker to get the right numbers in place. So don't, if any pictures did leak out, don't trust them for any info, because through the thing, it was like, yeah, that says that, but that was a goof. It really means this. Like, that was a constant thing throughout the playtest.
So let me tell you, I played Sela, the paladin, and I really like the feel of the paladin. It's actually pretty great. Mm-hmm. One of the things that happened was because you're making skill checks for initiative instead of like an initiative check, we walked up to this group of what looked like huddled soldiers. And as Sela, I was like, good guardsmen, please help us in our quest to find the killer of these poor priests or whatever. And so, like, because I was trying to use diplomacy to talk to them and they decided to attack us anyway, I got to roll diplomacy for my initiative check. Like, I don't know if anybody else had that experience, but I was like, Sela is an upstanding, lawful person. She's going to try to diplomacy the guards. And so I rolled diplomacy for my initiative, and it was amazing. I've never realized how great it was to be have your sense of reaction based on your charisma. It's pretty fun. Mm-hmm. She has this really sweet ability called Retributive Strike, where if you try to beat up her friends, she smacks you with the sword, and then you take penalties to hit anybody but her. So it's kind of like a taunting mechanic from Warcraft, and it's pretty sweet. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh man, you know, you don't pay attention to them, you're gonna hurt me first. She gets Lay on Hands at first level, but it is a D4, and
plus
she
four.
Has a... What was that?
D4 plus 4.
No, it's just D4. It's just D4 at first level. Mm-hmm. And then she can take a feat, and it bumps up to D6 plus 1. Did someone cheat in your Dell, Param?
No.
I think someone might have cheated in your Delph. Regardless, the feat bumps the dice up by one, and it also causes so that when you touch somebody, it's like, hey, you get a +1 bonus to your armor class, friend. Or if you wreck the undead like I did, haha, your AC is down by one. And the round that I did that was the round that our Mauricio crit and absolutely trashed that monster. So it was really cool. Taking penalties to your armor class will kill you in Pathfinder 2E because the critting is just based on how much you beat the opponent by. Mm-hmm. So those penalties are increasing your chance to crit just as much as any attack bonuses. Mm-hmm. So the other thing that's interesting about Lay on Hands is that baseline, it provokes an attack of opportunity. It requires somatic casting, mm-hmm. and somatic casting has this thing called the manipulate trait, which means you have to use your hands to do something. And the feat, I think it's called Hospital Tier Knight, doing it causes your Lay on Hands to no longer provoke. So I feel like one of the big takeaways I got is that we're seeing the core components of what makes each of these classes feel like those classes be sooner available at low levels. Mm-hmm. And they're usually less powerful than what we usually saw in Pathfinder 2E, but there are feats to buy it back if you want to invest in it. Mm-hmm. And so Sela has awesome Lay on Hands at first level.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I got to play Sela for one of the rounds, and the shielding mechanic became super important because of Retribution Strike and just general trying to be a protective shell of metal. When I finally got the boss on me, being able to raise that shield up and use it just literally saved me from just joining the goblin as a paste-shaped stain on the ground.
So maybe it was like an issue with the math like you were talking about, mm-hmm. but one thing that struck me as really weird is like a lot of the preview blogs have been painting the paladin as like the defense class, mm-hmm. and Sela's armor class is actually lower than Valoros's in the playtest.
Yeah, about one.
I mean, yeah, but like still, that's noticeable. Got the dude who can zip around and smack things really high with a good chance of hitting, and he has the best better armor class. It's like, come on, throw Sela a bone, give her her +1 armor class back. But overall, I really enjoyed the playtest. I thought it was fun. I'm looking forward to actually running the playtest events and potentially playing in them. I still got to talk to my team what we're going to do and make sure that team is still going to want to do it. But I'm hoping and I'm really excited after seeing it and hearing about it at PaizoCon.
Yeah. I'm still trying to organize what I'm going to do and whether or not we're going to do something as a network or anything like that.
Would be fun.
Yeah, I mean, part of me really wants to do like an online game and stuff for go through the playtest adventures, but we can't super spoil those.
No, yeah. Because so basically how the each of the different adventures are designed for in the Doomsday Dawn are designed to like test for specific stress test different parts of the rules. Like one of the things Jason Bowman made very clear is that there may or may not be places in the adventure that are designed to murder you because they want to see how much damage you can take and whether or not it'll kill you.
We recorded that in the panel and somebody asked him, is there a section where you're expected to die? And he said one word, yes.
Yeah. And so I kind of feel like running Doomsday Dawn would either have to be something we did after it was like after it wouldn't matter anymore, or like either we'd have to do it after it didn't matter anymore, or we would have to do it like, I don't know, like we couldn't really do it while they were collecting data because then it would provide all these spoilers and it would compromise all of those playtests. Right. So I feel like if we were going to do a playtest group, our best bet is probably to do like the quest or the Pathfinder Society adventures that are not as geared towards heavy-duty playtesting.
Right. Or convert a standalone module, like maybe Dragon's Demand.
Yeah, that could be really fun. We'd have to look at the monsters and see what they have, but I feel like Dragon's Demand would be really doable. That doesn't really have any crazy out-there monsters, if I remember right. Yeah. So Justin Franklin 3000 says, Parab, do it post-playtest. I don't know if I'd want to do it when the data doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, that's the big issue. And that's assuming that we broadcast the stuff instead of just doing it privately. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Who knows what we're going to do?
Emerald Spire, second edition. Oh, man, we tried Emerald Spire as, like, a private game thing, like, years ago, and it just... We did one game, and it never happened again.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was rough. Yeah.
I even did a logo! A logo!
It was a beautiful logo. It really was, and just we didn't do it again.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So, question. From what you saw, is there anything you think that is in Pathfinder 2E that is either going to be problematic or that you wish that they would change rather quickly?
I haven't seen enough to really think of anything like that.
Mm. Yeah.
You have something.
I have one.
Yes, you do.
So when they were doing the flip through of the different chapters, they put on the gnome race, and you know, I sat in the front right next to Owen Casey Stevens for the banquet, and that was super fun. You're a great host, Owen.
Mm-hmm.
But I sat right next to Owen Casey Stevens, and I got a good look at the gnome page, and Paizo. The race thing is cool, but it's... Alright, so I gotta backtrack a little bit in order to explain my thinking. When one of the panels that we were sitting in with Jason, where he was talking about Pathfinder 2nd Edition, it was the Find Your Path one, if you want to listen to it when we get all the content up later. In one of those, he talked about changing things in order to broaden the design, like how they took traits and condensed like traits and a whole bunch of other different mechanics together to make the backgrounds, so that like, hey, instead of having this one really small bonus that's really hard to tweak, and it's way too easy to get a bonus, a trait that is so good that everybody takes it, hint, reactionary, and like... That doesn't leave a lot of design space. So they're like, yeah, we made backgrounds to broaden the game and to give us more knobs to twist and more variety to give you, because variety is the spice of role-playing. And to me, ancestries don't do that. And I'm going to sound like a heretic because... Alex, what are you talking about? Each ancestry has like 10 feats and you might get like 4 of them. And, you know, it'll be great. And so like... I don't think the problem is very evident when you look at the core races, because all of the core races are basically just humans that live with different lifespans and different cultures. They're not really all that physically different. They're kind of just different shaped humans, right? And the problem is like when you start getting to some of the classic races that have biologies that do not mesh well with ancestry feats. And what I mean by that is, okay, I'm going to use Kitsune as an example because I'm super Kitsune fan, whatever. This applies to like 4 different shape-changing races in Pathfinder. Not just them, but you get my drift.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a Kitsune under the current system, the only thing that you would get is your ability boost, your speed, you know, your cool little descriptors of like, hey, I'm a Kitsune, I'm a shape-changer, cool. And you would get low light vision. That's basically all the gnome gets. They get the ability boost, the speed, the low light vision. And the size category, of course, but I wasn't counting that.
Hmm.
And so, like, that means that as a Kitsune, you would have to pick shape-changing as an ancestry feat. And that means that there are Kitsune who don't have shape-changing because they wouldn't have to pick it at first level. And there are other races that kind of fall into a similar problem. Like, oh man, I'm a Nagaji. I have these really hard scales. Too bad they don't matter unless I take having the hard scales ancestry feat. Oh man, I'm a Weiyang. I have this cool shadowy ability. Oh, too bad it doesn't matter unless I take the cool shadowy ability feat. It's just, I think that each race is going to need some kind of baseline power that they get at first level, and that all ancestries share that same power because you're a member of this ancestry, and this is one of those, this is an ability that defines your people, essentially. Mm-hmm. Like your heritage, because right now it's too varied. There's nothing that really cements them. Mm-hmm. And it's going to cause problems down the line for races that canonically have an established ability that they absolutely need.
I agree with you if that turns out to be the final case when they do release a lot of races. Like, I can think of, like what are Weiyangs without their shadowy abilities? Like, you know, that's super core to their race. But to be fair, the only race we've seen The only ancestry we've seen in any detail is gnome. We don't know what post-core is going to be like.
Right, but they can't go and give new races a baseline ability and an ancestry feat. And to go back and say this race has to take this feat at first level feels wrong. Because that is automatically removing versatility that other races have. And as we know in Pathfinder, if you have a choice between something that is locked in that you don't get to pick and something that's versatile, the versatile option is always stronger. Like there are some very small exceptions, but generally getting to customize and pick exactly the perfect thing that synergizes with your build is better. And that is what will happen. Like that's just the nature of how these sort of games play. So I feel like the game needs to give you something baseline to say, this is what the ancestry is all about. If you still get an ancestry feat on top of that, cool. If you don't, and that means you don't get your first ancestry feat till level 3, that's life. Mm-hmm. Based on the fact that they have heritages, I imagine you would get this one ability plus a feat, but I don't know. However, I think that long-term, this idea of I don't get any race powers, or I don't get any ancestry powers that are just core to my being this species is a problem.
Well, we'll have to see how it goes. Like, I agree with you that for certain races it has to be adjusted. It can't just be a choice all the time.
No.
But I'm just hoping that the playtest, that by the time that becomes an issue, they've figured out a solution for that.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I plan on making sure that that is noted in my feedback. We'll see if it works.
Indeed.
Yes.
We got some questions. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, we do. Mm-hmm. Oh, we have a lot of people who are responding to my my mini rant. It's kind of a soapbox, I guess. But go ahead. Let's hear some questions.
Was there anything at PazoCon that disappointed me? No.
I wasn't crazy about the Pathfinder Society special. Not because that special was bad. My table was kind of eh.
Mm.
It was one of those groups where, like, it's like, oh man, there's the monsters. Let's charge forward like heroes. And everybody stayed in the back. And because everybody stayed in the back, we had 5 deaths in our special.
Ooh. Oh, bad groups happen. That's too bad it happened at PazoCon.
Yeah, I feel really bad for the paladin who was a halfling and never got near anybody. So it's like, hey, cool, you're wearing full plate and can move 3 squares around. Yay! But it was like he blew through both charges of his he blew through all 10 stones of his first aid gloves, bringing people back from Breath of Life, and he spent all of his lay on hands rounds in 2 scenarios using Ultimate Mercy. So that's life.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't the best game I had ever run. I was disappointed because I really wanted to like the table. And I guess that's just kind of life. Mm-hmm. The special they ran this year is called 8-99 Solstice Scar. Mm-hmm. And it's a story told in 4 acts. And the idea is that each act comes out in a different quarter so that there is a new multi-tier special that you can run at conventions year-round instead of just, you know, there are 2 at one at PaizoCon, 1 at Gen Con, and then there's no more for the rest of the year, and then nobody has anything new to play, and nobody wants to do multi-tier specials at these and other conventions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the idea. And so part 1 has sections 1, 2, and 3 in it. So, like, each section is a part of the adventure, and they're different locations with different objectives. And then so part B has 1, 3, 4. So it introduces 4, and you redo 1 and 3. And then C has, C has 3, 4, 5. So it uses the final fight of the first one, the final fight of the second one, and adds a new final area. And then presumably the last one would be 4, 5, 6 would be the final one. And I've done all of these on the same character in relatively the same level range. So, like, I think the first one I did, I was level 7, and I hit 8, and now I'm doing the other ones in 8. And I thought maybe this would be good for feedback purposes. Oh my gosh, let me tell you, the new one is so rough. It is so rough because Section 3 is very clearly designed to be the final boss fight of the first one, and you open with it. And so, without too much spoilers, you fight a trio of, and my tier, you fight a trio of undead that have the potential to slap anywhere from a minimum of one negative level, if you're lucky, to a maximum of about six in a single round.
That's super deadly.
Yeah, no, my wolf animal companion took four of his six hit dice in negative levels. I took four on my hunter. Someone else took a bunch. Like, I spent so much money removing them, and that was the first fight. And it was ridiculous. I definitely think that if they're gonna continue to do stuff, they have to be more aware of where these fights are occurring. It can't just be like I slide this in from the old one and put it in. Yeah. No, it was so rough. And every single section was rough because all three of them were designed clearly to be end bosses and to be really challenging because they're the end. It was really, really difficult. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm seeing someone in chat saying that their fight was over in a single round.
Well, that's impressive.
Yeah. It happens.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. Justin Franklin's question we answered. Yes, we did play the playtest. Mm-hmm. Jadwiga Crystal wants to know, which panel did you enjoy the most?
I enjoyed Finding Your Path, the one where they asked people about their opinions on the playtest and so far, based on the delve. It, to me, showed a lot of guts to get up in front of a panel of like 60 people and legitimately ask for criticism. That's not easy.
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed the Designing Faiths and Philosophies panel that Owen Casey Stevens crashed, and because it had God Mad Libs. The basis of the panel was that historically gods in pantheon settings don't always have super tight, unique philosophies and themes. Sometimes they're really random, such as you'll have someone that's the god of bridges and economy and Italian architects and prostitution, and these things don't always make sense together. So one of the exercises for the panel was we played Mad Libs, and then they got applied to deities that we then had to figure out what their backstories were to explain why we had someone called the Confused whose weapon was a feather.
That's funny. Let me think. You know, I only really did those two panels, Param.
Mm-hmm.
So, let me think. Mm-hmm.
We will have almost all the panels available to listen to on our stream.
Because we have great people who do great things.
Mm-hmm.
Let me think.
Well, if you only did two panels, one of them's obviously your favorite.
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, I feel like it definitely was Find the Path just because, you know, that was, like I said, it takes a lot of guts to get up in front of a group of people and say, critique my game, please. Just apply your criticism right here to this project on my heart that I've spent 4 years working on in absolute secrecy.
That was super brave. Another one that was super brave was a related, they named it similarly, called Find Your Path, which was before that one, where they just said, hey, if you guys were making PF2, what would you do?
Yeah.
And just had a whole room full of people throw random ideas at them.
Like, dude, there was that woman who literally talked about dwarves for, like, 10 minutes until, like, I was like, I am with Jacobs now. We got to nuke the race. I'm done. Please make the stop. I'm sorry if you're listening. It was kind of rambly.
I want more dwarves.
Yeah, I like dwarves. I think dwarves are fun. I want more halflings, though, TBH. I think halflings are fun. I'm also really looking forward to making an elf paladin in the new edition. It's going to be good.
Will KD team be broadcasting their playtest? We don't know what we're doing with our playtest yet.
Mm-hmm. What do you guys want us to do?
Yeah, would you guys want us to do a live playtest? Let us know.
Yeah, post your comments in the comment section of the No Direction site, or on YouTube, or on Twitch, or, you know, someplace that Param can see them. Because if you want it, we can be persuaded. Yes. We can definitely be persuaded. We should make Ryan run them all. That'd be really funny.
Did you do the trivia contest after the banquet, and how did your team do? Me and Ryan did the trivia contest. We will talk about that in next week's episode when I'm with Ryan doing the official recap.
I went upstairs and played Cards Against Humanity with Paizo staffers. I can't tell you the details of that game because it is not age appropriate for this particular podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much nothing that involves the words Cards Against Humanity is appropriate for this podcast.
Ondar91 asks, any wizard impressions at this point? I only ask because wizards is my favorite.
Yeah.
What were your wizards impressive? Huh?
Man, oh man, those magic mass missiles were full of magic pain.
Yes, they were. Magic missiles is super painful and looks like it will level up to be extra painful. I did get to play for like 20 minutes of the first part of a demo. I did get to play Ezrin, and it actually plays a lot like there's a lot of stuff that didn't change. If wizard feels like it's one of the classes that stayed the most the same. Except for the obvious magic missiles being more like the Starfinder magic missiles, which is also full of pain. It's the spell that convinced me that the damage technomancer is absolutely possible in Starfinder.
Oh man, did you see the thing where like you can spend three actions to do like whirlwind missiles?
Oh my goodness.
Whirlwind missiles. You jump up in the air anime style, point your finger out in a gun, and just spin around. And all the missiles fly everywhere, and they peg people right in their heads. And they're like, ah.
And magic that missiles never still never miss. No they attack rolls miss. For magic missiles.
Yeah, they're just, they're, nope. Mm-hmm. Poor magic missiles, they're just gone.
Mm-hmm. I know Acid Splash actually splashed acid, not just on the target, and I didn't know that. And accidentally tagged my rogue. Oops, guys, sorry.
Instead of splashing like a cup, you're like taking a big old gallon bucket and drenching that nearby rogue.
Mm-hmm.
Poor guy.
And on crit, it does persistent. Mm-hmm. Meta magic feat was super weird.
Yeah, that's where you add extra actions to do cool stuff, right?
Yeah, and so instead of meta magic making the spell go up in level, you take extra actions to cast it. Most magic in the game uses two actions. Some use one, like the shield spell and others. But the meta magic feats just add an extra action to the end. So you can totally use those a lot more than you would in Pathfinder.
Mm-hmm. Paramer asks, what surprised you most about the playtest? Valoros, not Valoros. Okay, I remembered something important, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, one of the big things you fight a lot in the Delve was zombies versus skeletons. Mm-hmm. And they're there for a very real reason. They're there so you can, from a design perspective, feel the difference between weaknesses and damage reduction. Because the skeletons have damage reduction that's only overcome by bludgeoning, and the zombies have a weakness to slashing. And let me tell you, they are not exactly the same mechanically, first off. The reason is that in Pathfinder 1, if you're a monster that has damage reduction, if you're a zombie that has damage reduction that's overcome by slashing, that means you do your normal damage to the target with slashing weapons, and all other weapons do reduced damage. With the weakness mechanic, that means you're like piercing and you're bludgeoning, do their normal full damage to a zombie, which honestly makes sense. You know, if you take a shovel and hit the zombie in the head, World War Z taught me that it will kill it eventually. But when you slash at it with a slashing weapon, the GM is like, that doesn't do 8 damage. It does 13 damage. And it feels so satisfying. Like, you told the GM one thing, and they just gave you, like, it's like when you win the slot machine, and, like, you're expecting to get, like, four coins back, and, like, 9 come out, and you're like, oh! Grabby fingers! It feels really good. So anybody who's like, oh, these things are the same thing, why are you changing it? It feels much better. It feels so much better. So much better.
Okay. Yes, it totally did feel different, and it was extra, but the zombies had tons of hit points, like a scary amount of hit points. So taking advantage of that slashing weakness was important. But then when the rogue crit killed one, like it had, I guess happened in both our games.
Yeah.
It was great.
Oh, no. That zombie, mm-hmm. You know, it didn't matter that it was weak to slashing. It turns out you are weak to having a rapier adequately shoved into your brain.
Mm-hmm.
We have someone named FL Fontes. Are we allowed to post the summoners related to the playtest, or are they bound by NDAs? We are totally allowed to place anything that is the designers talking to us about the playtest. So, like, the Find Your Path panel mm-hmm. and the How to Playtest panel will both be on the site. We are not allowed to record the delve, I think, because I know they didn't allow photography. Yeah,
the delves themselves are not recorded, but those weren't panels. All of the panels that we're going to release all the panels at PaizoCon, except for a couple that we missed due to technical reasons. Though still, we got more this year, a bigger percentage this year than we did last year, with the exception of course, panels that other podcasts put on, because they will be doing that. So, yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So, you know what surprised me? I don't know why it surprised me, but I was surprised at how great Dan had Twitch streaming covered this year.
Yeah, it was super cool to see that it was happening. Like, they had live streams of most of the big playtest news, and then a live stream of the banquet itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Indeed. Wow. So, we've been talking for about an hour now. Do you have any other thoughts? Oh gosh. Lucas asked, was there Pathfinder Society, Starfinder Society news? There was. Oh my gosh, there was news. We should end with this news.
Plan. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so first off, they showed off the Pathfinder Society Season 10 symbol, and it's the Ruby Phoenix Tournament logo with a Decemvirate helmet that looks like it's been smashed down right in the middle, and it's Season of the 10, because it's Season 10, and it's perfect. Oh, I'm so excited. Also, the implication that some Decemvirate member got their head smashed in is great. Mm-hmm. We haven't really seen anything done with the Decemvirate since... Well, it might be a minor spoiler, but not since Eyes of the Ten. So to see that storyline end out Pathfinder 1's reign of Pathfinder Society is super cool. And it's got me really excited to see how the Ruby Phoenix tournament plays into this, considering that the name of the very first scenario of Season 10 is called the Haljin Cataclysm. What wonders could await us in this cataclysm of Haljin proportions?
Right.
I am so excited. And I don't know where they're going with this, but I'm personally hoping that Season 10 will see the entirety of the Decemvirate dead. I want them all dead. Every single one of them.
Oh!
They do nothing good. Our entire society runs perfectly fine without them. Let them go.
There's a better retirement plan than deceased.
No. They'll get to go hang out with Nethys. I can't see them being anything but neutral. Maybe neutral evil.
You don't think there's just a group, a varying of alignments that all disagree with each other?
That is literally impossible. I can't tell you why, because it's okay. A spoiler.
Okay, super spoilery, so no, I guess not.
So, yes. And then for Starfinder Society, we learned that the upcoming season is basically a splinter season. It's Season 1A, right, is what they're calling it?
Yeah, they're calling it Season 1A.
And basically, we are going to the Scoured Stars region where the first Pathfinder expedition failed. We are recruiting new minor factions that have cool benefits. And the first minor faction was available to people who did GM support for PaizoCon. So if you ran games at PaizoCon, you got a boon that unlocked this brand new faction that gives you special fame rewards. And they are good fame rewards. They all involve aliens joining the society. Mm-hmm. So it makes it seem like they're definitely looking to bring in more cool races as time goes on.
Indeed.
Yes. Man, I am really excited for this new season of Pathfinder Society. I know people are like, oh, it's going to be over soon. No. This story looks like it's going to matter really big going into 3.5. The other thing we learned about, or not 3.5, going into Pathfinder 2E. The other big thing we learned about the Pathfinder Society is that there is going to be what sounds like the most horrifying special scenario ever coming out. It seems to be an interactive special that I don't know if it will be its final name, but its code name is called The Grinder.
Oh.
And so basically the idea is that this is a scenario that has designed with like an easier mode and a hard mode. And you're going to want to do the hard mode, apparently, and if you're going to want to beat the scenario, according to John Compton and crew. And it sounds like it's designed to just tear through characters. And one thing that I heard from John when we were talking is that he mentioned that one of the ideas they're throwing around for this scenario is the idea that, like, they'll be keeping track of which characters die, almost like Wall of Names style. And when they've reached certain thresholds, like maybe did 10 wizards die? Did 10 kitsune die? Did one really rare race boon die? And like when that happens, like trophies will appear on the screen and the trophies might even do something. So people are like, oh man, we got to get this person killed. And so it sounds like if you don't want to just leave your characters to do nothing, you can get them all murdered instead. They did not announce if there will be new races for Pathfinder Society. I imagine they probably wouldn't, because they're about to close the doors on that game anyway. For Starfinder Society, they announced that, I don't remember if it's right away or whether it's soon after, but they basically said that the legacy races are going to be added to the always available list.
Okay, that makes sense. Those were the very first boon races to be introduced, plus they're in the core rulebook, plus there's a lot of interest in playing legacy races, so that... That's a good, solid move. And I say this as somebody that has a legacy race boon. I don't mind if that just becomes open.
Yeah, and oh man, there are a couple of scenario boons that become way better with this light. There are a couple of adventures that give you either a new race, or if you already have that race as like a boon or something, you get like an ability score boost. And it's really good. Mm-hmm. It's going to be really good when that comes out. So overall I thought it was a pretty exciting PaizoCon. There was a lot of energy from the staff and from the fans. There was a lot of interest in new Paizo products. It looks like we're coming up into a pretty good year for Paizo, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. It was sure the best PaizoCon I've ever been to.
All one of them, Param. Mm-hmm. Oh, look, Param, let's talk about swag before we end. Did you get any good swag?
I got that really cool compass thing I put up on Facebook.
Yeah. So they had the campaign coin guys made a compass rose that is literally just a coin that is a very fancy compass rose that shows you, like, you can use it to show your players where north and south is. I bought this giant plush D20, and ooh, I got Paizo staffers to sign it. And it looks super cool. And it's got like a memory foam interior. So like you can actually roll it, but it's super weighted. So don't roll it. although I had this one great story where I gave it to one of the CS people, Katina. And she was like, I'm just going to roll it to see where it goes. And she rolls it and gets the natural one. And she's like, it is fate. And she rolls it. And she's like, oh, but I wonder, maybe it's not fate. And the die is just predetermined to roll natural ones. And I said, well, let me try. And I take it and I throw it up in the air and it rolls. And I get a natural 20. And she looks at the die and goes, it was really funny.
Mm-hmm.
Katina, you're the best if you're listening to this.
Okay. All right, gang. We have been going a lot longer than we thought we would do this. I hope you guys have enjoyed this random episode of No Direction Out of Character. If you liked more random nonsense from us, let us know if you want us to do more of this on different topics.
Please let me rant about Steven Universe for an hour and a half. I have so many things to say.
Oh, that's happening. So many things. That's happening. That's happening, but that might be a geek together, because that sounds like a geek together.
Yeah. It is a geek together. Yeah. I need to geek together with my people. Universe people.
This is a good point. We want to also thank all of our Patreon backers. It's because of you that we've been able to ramp up all this production and introduce all this new stuff to the network. If you want to support us on Patreon, there's links on our website at nodirectionpodcast.com. We appreciate each and every one of you, and there's a series of benefits for those of you that back at high enough levels. There's the cards that we're going to be sending out to backers. There is also levels in which you can just reserve some of our time. If you want us to do anything for an hour, there's levels that you can secure that.
If you want to hear me rant for an hour, you can do it.
Indeed.
It's going to be great. Oh, also, we should probably shout out to our friends at the Oh, Roll for Combat podcast, because they
helped a lot. Oh, yeah. Roll for Combat sponsored our PazoCon. They helped me get there. They also provided the room that me and Ryan stayed at. And they were also super cool guys to hang out with. I also was on a panel with them that you're going to get to hear during the seminar coverage, in which they did a crossover between Pathfinder and Starfinder with the Order of the Amber Die playing the Pathfinder character iconics for it. And that was a lot of fun. So if you want to support them, go over to rollforcombat.com. They're a Starfinder actual play podcast. They're playing through the Dead Sun's Adventure Path as their main podcast, and they're also doing Starfinder Society scenarios, and those are really fun. So check those out at rollforcombat.com. Thank you all for sponsoring.
I was going to say, we met some really cool people for a podcast called Find the Path at PaizoCon.
But don't anymore on that. really cool. We met some really cool people, but there's stuff to be talked about there. We want to thank Benjamin Loomis, who surprised guest DJ'd our No Direction Adventurous and actually did live sound effects for us during the game, and he is so much better at it than I am. But of course he would be. The Sirenscape Benjamin Loomis. That was a blast. And we're going to have all these seminars up. We're going to have our For Reals PaizoCon recap during a full-length No Direction a week from now. We just did this because we were excited. I wanted to get Alex's opinions on stuff. And we didn't want to wait 2 weeks to talk about the Starfinder stuff.
Mm-hmm.
First seminar win? I don't know. We probably very soon, but we don't know. But once they start, it's going to be a fire hose. Because there are so many. Yeah. There are so many. They had 4 seminar rooms this year.
Yeah, they did. There were all the seminars.
Yeah, it was...
Every single one.
4 rooms, all the time. Oh my gosh, so many seminars. All right, till next time. If you want to find the path, you need No Direction.